Hello and welcome to Tech Tench, your weekly status update on the technology business. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones and I'm joined this week from the BBC Technology News Desk by Zoe Kleiman. Welcome, Zoe.
Hello.
Good to see you again. And my special guest is the man with the job of making London and other UK cities rivals to Silicon Valley when it comes to high-tech startups. Gerard Grech of Tech City UK. Welcome, Gerard.
Hello.
Very good to have you in the tent for the first time. Now, here's a taste of what's coming up.
Hey, this looks easy. I'll do, you know, the Uber for X or the TaskRabbit for Y.
I'm in a huge swarm of mosquitoes that are attacking me right now.
I could have been the first investor in Apple. And I said, no, I regret that.
All of that coming up. But first, is this the week that saw a shift in the balance of power in Silicon Valley? I ask that question because there have been a raft of results from technology giants, and three names stood out with contrasting stories. Apple, still making huge profits but suffering its first year-on-year fall in sales for 13 years, disappointed investors. Whereas Facebook, tripling its profits and beating all forecasts, delighted Wall Street. And then there was Twitter, with more disappointment in the form of its latest user figures. Our man in Silicon Valley, Dave Lee, has been watching them all, and I asked him what we'd learned this week.
I think we've learned that the only company that's really performing well at the moment is Facebook. Apple now have their worst results in over a decade. You've got Twitter, which I dread getting their earnings reports every quarter because it's just simply bad news after bad news. But Facebook, they're increasing their revenue. They seem to be getting more users constantly, despite already having well over a billion users. So that's what we're learning. We're learning that Facebook is just storming ahead. And I was at its developers conference 2 weeks ago, and it seems not only are they doing very well now, but they've made so many big moves into new technologies that it's hard to imagine any way for Facebook to ever be facing a decline here.
It is all built on advertising, Facebook. Is there a sense of almost the changing the guard? Apple, a company built on hardware, uniquely successful hardware, stepping back a little. The new young pretender, real stock market darling and Silicon Valley sort of emblem now.
Well, I think there's a shift in what makes money in technology now. And I spoke to an analyst recently who said he thinks the golden age of selling hardware has perhaps moved on because, you know, the iPhone for Apple was obviously hugely successful, most successful technology product ever, had big, big margins, but they're not making as much money from that anymore. The only plus point from Apple's results was in their services division. So that's things like Apple Music and iTunes and more software things. That's where they're seeing growth themselves, and Facebook is of course all service. That's how they make all of their money. I think it's perhaps too early to say it's a change of the guard. I mean, a bad quarter for Apple still represents $50 billion of revenue, so
which is a lot more than Facebook.
Yeah, a lot more than Facebook. And indeed, talking about Apple's services in terms of scale, Apple is still massively ahead. But you know, investors care more about patterns and of future potential. And so you'd think Apple would be looking quite urgently to see how they can bolster their what may be, end up being a flagging hardware division, and instead doing more services, more subscription things, more regular money coming in that isn't from selling gadgetry.
Dave Lee in San Francisco. Gerard Grech, our special guest. Yeah, you're trying to push London and other cities as tech hotspots. But when you look across at those tech giants, I mean, it has been a week when we've begun to question Apple and its future growth. And we're marvelling still at what Facebook is achieving, aren't we?
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, it's one quarter's results. I think what's really interesting for me is how collectively, when you look at iTunes, App Store revenue and Apple Pay, collectively, they've outperformed the Mac business for the first time.
And I think it's the move to services.
Well, I think Apple has done a great job in ensuring that as many people they can reach have bought an Apple iPhone of some kind. And now what they're probably focusing on is how to build on that foundation and actually look at adjacent businesses that will increasingly become the core business. So I think that's very interesting. And clearly there's evolving business models that are going on within the company. But I think it's a, I wouldn't say it's the changing of the guard.
Wouldn't you rather be, though, in Facebook's position, dominating a brand new industry, mobile advertising, than still trying to make money from hardware?
So Facebook have done a very good job of on mobile, that's for sure. Because don't forget, Facebook started, you could say, on the internet, via the web, through desktop PCs and Macs. But I think you also have to generally say that Facebook is doing a very good job in serving the needs of advertisers, which is very important. I mean, they're very much focusing on the product and their services and making sure that advertisers are getting what they need out of the Facebook platform.
Zoe Kleinman, we look at this from the business point of view, but we also look at this from the consumer point of view. Do you think consumers now feel Facebook is in some way cooler than Apple, or are they a bit distrustful of them both, do you think?
Well, I actually think we're being a little bit harsh on hardware here. I mean, here at the BBC, we don't really do speculation and rumour, do we? But there is much speculation and rumour in very high places about a car, isn't there? Apple working on a car.
That's right.
And people have come out and said, well, it would be mad if they weren't working on a car. Now, obviously, there is nothing, that we don't know anything about it, but if such a project is ongoing, perhaps the Apple car will become the new Apple iPhone. Who knows? And I think people who like Apple really, really like Apple. It's got a very loyal following, a very loyal brand. And I spoke to one expert who said, you know, Apple doesn't release a million products and see what flies. It's very, very strategic. It spends a long time developing a select number of things and then refining them and making them better and better and better. That's what it's good at. That's what people like. It should stick with what it knows works.
Good point. And I have to say, I got battered slightly on social media for even suggesting that Apple might be in a little bit of trouble, something that causes a lot of dispute online. We've got to move on now. I've been meeting a man with a far longer perspective on Silicon Valley. As well as being the man behind the games pioneer Atari and one of the founding fathers of the modern video games industry, Nolan Bushnell was something of a mentor to Apple's founders, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. At the age of 73, he's just signed a deal to develop new games for smartphones. I asked him why he's interested in making games again.
One of the reasons that the Atari games still have a certain amount of gravitas 40 years later is that we fine-tuned them very, very cleverly because we had such poor graphics that all we really had was the gameplay, the characteristics that make for games to be satisfying. And I feel like some of the new games that I see all the time, they have wonderful graphics, but actually quite bad gameplay. And I think I can bring some of that back.
Now, if we look at your career, you were perhaps one of the first tech young millionaires. You were an advisor, a guru perhaps to Steve Jobs. Looking back on it, you must be proud of that career.
I'm very proud. I'm really been proud of my relationship with Steve. My one regret is that I turned down one-third of Apple Computer for $50,000. I could have been the first investor in Apple. And I said no. I regret that.
Just take us through that decision. When that was offered to you, you just thought, nah, that's not going to be worth anything.
My belief was that Steve was too green at the time. And I think that he actually was. And the fact that Mike Markle came in as the first president of Apple was very, very important to the growth.
And these days, we've got people like Mark Zuckerberg, who started at 20 and at 30-odd is probably the most powerful global figure in technology. You can be green and still make it, can't you?
Well, I think that it's not new. I mean, look at the tremendous work that Mozart did at a very, very young age. In some ways, experience in a moving and changing market is often a detriment because you have to forge new concepts, and the person who is not steeped in the old way of doing things is in some way advantaged in that way.
Nolan Bushnell, an absolute legend of the technology world. Great to meet him and find him so young still in his outlook at 73. Now, Zoe Kleinman, you've got some of the week's other big tech stories. It sounds like the plot of a blockbuster movie. A nuclear plant in Germany has been infected with multiple computer viruses. Does this sound like a job for Bruce Willis, Zoe?
Well, I don't think we need to call Bruce quite yet, Rory. And there were indeed several viruses found at the Gundremmingen plant, which is about 120 kilometres northwest of Munich. But the power firm, RWE, says it won't affect its control systems because they're not connected to the internet, which is somewhat of a relief. The viruses were found on computers, in offices, USB sticks, and also in a system used to model the movement of nuclear fuel rods. And one of those viruses was the notorious Conficker worm, which wreaked havoc when it was unleashed 7 years ago, and it's still a troublemaker today. And the German feds are now investigating how this has all happened, and RWE, the firm that owns the plant, says over 1,000 computers have been checked and cleaned up so far.
Yes, very, very chilling stuff. We've heard before about the dangers of things on USB sticks causing havoc. And a couple of stories this week illustrating the dangers of using your smartphone on the roads.
Yes, that's right, Rory. Also in Germany, the city of Augsburg, I love this actually, has installed lines of streetlights actually in the roadside, on the road, next to zebra crossings, so that pedestrians can see the red lights even if they're engrossed in their phones. And did you know, Rory, there's a word for people who happen to be engrossed in their phones as they're walking around? You ready?
Yeah.
Smombies. It's a cross of smartphone and zombie.
Sounds like me.
Me too. Meanwhile, in the US, a teenage girl is being sued. She's been accused of Snapchatting at the wheel, which resulted in a crash, unfortunately. She certainly uploaded pictures of her injuries shortly after the accident, and she captioned one, "I'm lucky to be alive." But the passenger in the other vehicle is now in a wheelchair.
It's quite sobering, actually. Mm-hmm. And finally, the UK tech firm Dyson unveiled its first beauty product this week. Why do we care and why has it caused a stir?
Dyson's launched a hairdryer, Rory. I'm sure this is of great interest to you.
Yeah.
Which it claims is quieter and less damaging to hair than everything else that's on the market. However, it's got a hefty price tag of £299, which is about $400. In its defence, the firm says it's spent over $70 million developing it, but people on social media have been pretty gobsmacked about the cost. It's about 10 times the average hairdryer price in the UK, so it's a massive investment, isn't it? It's called the Supersonic. It's powered by a miniaturised hair pump that's a bit like the technology used in the Dyson desk fan. And if you can picture it, it kind of looks like an upside down exclamation mark. It's got a big hollow tube at the top and a sort of handle coming down at the bottom. And Beyonce, who I'm sure is a friend of this programme, Rory.
She's on every week. Yeah.
She is. I know, we can't get rid of her. She has the world talking about a lyric in her new album which mentions a mysterious Becky with the good hair. So I'd like to throw in our Tuppenceworth and say perhaps this is Becky's secret.
Oh, golly. Thank you very much for that, Zoe. You're listening to Tech Tent on the BBC World Service. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones. In a moment, is the so-called gig economy really working? First, though, we've been talking a lot about Silicon Valley today. Its remarkable success has inspired cities around the world to set up their own tech startup hubs, hopeful of replicating the magic. Think Berlin, London or Lisbon, to name a few cities vying to be Europe's centre of tech innovation. But in Africa, efforts to foster a similar startup culture have to battle with poor infrastructure, power cuts and a skills gap, as the BBC's Ed Butler found out in Ghana in West Africa recently.
This is not a journey I was anticipating making when I left Accra a few minutes ago. We're about 10 kilometres outside of the city centre, and I've come across a rather rickety old rope bridge. It's about one person wide. I'm in a huge swarm of mosquitoes that are attacking me right now. And I'm coming to what's known as an incubator. This is one of the handful of places where new tech startups come to receive training and funding. And Ghana's online business startups are really quite a happening thing these days.
Hello.
Hello there. I'm Ed from BBC.
Yeah,
how are you?
Ed.
What's your name?
David.
David Sleek is the CEO of a tech startup called Flippy Campus. It's a sort of Facebook aimed at African universities and schools. He and his small team of developers are among the residents here at the MEST incubator.
So this is my flip wall. This is where I see information that my friends are posting. So this is more like a Facebook wall.
So I mean, whilst you're obviously offering news, you're also in competition with Facebook and Twitter, two of the monsters of Silicon Valley, right here in Accra.
Yeah, so I think what we are doing is local content. We are providing local, relevant content for tertiary students. So on Facebook, you could find anything, something related to sports and all of that. But on Flippy, you could know that, you know, a university in Nigeria, this is what is happening. My friend in a different university in maybe Ghana, you know, he's writing an examination, he's so busy. You could also know that on my campus this weekend, there's a party and all of that.
What's it like starting a business in Ghana? What are the challenges you face here?
I think the challenges range from students not having smartphones to internet access being too poor or even blackout for some time. So students, their phones are off. That means they cannot use your application.
Yeah, because the blackouts mean, I guess, they can't recharge their phones, even if they do have a smartphone, right?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, are you optimistic that you can scale up this kind of operation so that people like you, people with an idea, can expand what's possible in Ghana?
I think so, because I think there are a few things that you need if you are trying to do an internet business. You need a laptop, you need access to internet, and you need to be able to build what you dream of. And after you build it, you need to sell it. And that's something that we've been able to put together. We've been able to dream of something, we've been able to build it, and then we are out there selling it.
Regular power outages are a problem here, as is a shortage of expertise. The Flippy Campus team learned most of their coding from blogs and guides on the internet. Emmanuel Kwate is the head of products at the MEST incubator.
We provide a number of material resources, so heavily subsidised office space, electricity, backup generator power, we provide high-speed internet. Beyond all of those material resources, I believe that the greater value is in their relationships.
What's the potential here for startups in Africa?
We think it's phenomenal. That's why we've been doing this for a little over 5 years. A significant percentage of the human population, the human family, is going to be based on the continent. That's a huge, 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 huge market. Our thinking is, well, like, what happens when you get like an amazing developer from Ghana and like an incredible CEO from Nigeria, like and a business lead from Kenya? Like literally, what happens? And we'll see. Mm. Very early days yet.
Yeah, and a lot of Africa, let's face it, is not yet online.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the other challenge. So like you'll find that like half of our teams are building products for like building global products. So products that are anyone like you sitting in your room in London or sitting in the room in like Brooklyn can use. But like also like, very excitingly, another half building tools and services for local and regional markets. And of course like they have to wrestle with infrastructure, payments, logistics. But we firmly believe that someone has to start. Someone needs to take the first step. And we firmly believe that our teams are the ones that are going to try and succeed.
That report from Ed Butler in Ghana. Gerard Greco, our special guest, your job is to promote UK cities as tech clusters. But what does make a city able to compete with Silicon Valley? It's not easy, is it?
Well, I would say that there are four key drivers to the growth of any tech cluster. First of all, talent. You need the talent. You need the universities. You need the colleges of further education that have very specialist knowledge or expertise. Secondly, smart capital that obviously follows the talent. If you don't have the talent, you won't necessarily get the smart capital.
And that's going to be difficult in somewhere like Ghana to get the capital to
it
even
depends.
Consider.
It depends. It really does depend because, as he said towards the end of his report, it depends what type of services and products you're building, whether they're global ones or whether they're local or regional ones. Number three, I would say infrastructure. You need office space. You need good broadband. You need organizations that can help companies scale internationally. And number four is political leadership. You need to make sure that there are people that are enabling entrepreneurs to have a voice.
Sure. I'll give you a number five, and I think that's time. What people often ignore about Silicon Valley is it's been around an awful long time. You know, since before the war, actually. Mr. Hewlett and Mr. Packard got together in 1938, I think.
Absolutely. But I would say that if you look at the last 6 years in London, 6 years ago, it probably would not have been the conversation we're having right now. You would not have perceived London to be a top three world-class tech hub. And now it is. And so I think the combination of those four drivers having come together very well, the introduction of a number of policies by the British government. There are more funds that have been raised over the last 3 years than any other time in the last 10 years. The ecosystem is much more robust. I mean, you've got companies like Just Eat, TransferWise, Skyscanner in Edinburgh. I mean, these are world-class businesses that are instinctively international from day one and growing very quickly.
We will return to this subject just about every programme we do, but we've got to move on. Now, whether you call it the gig economy or the sharing economy, Silicon Valley has also pioneered the idea that we're all going to give up working for one employer and drive cars for Uber or rent out our rooms via Airbnb for a living. But in recent years, many of the new breed of gig economy companies have been forced to change their business model or have simply disappeared. Lee Buskey is a founder and executive chairwoman of TaskRabbit, a website that matches customers who want odd jobs done with people willing to be paid to do them. She spoke to the BBC's Edwin Lane.
We were one of the first really to pioneer the sharing economy before it was the sharing economy, before people even used that term. And I think that as this really started to take off, so many people sort of jumped on the bandwagon and thought, hey, this looks easy. I'll do, you know, the Uber for X or the TaskRabbit for Y. But I think what people dramatically underestimated is that this isn't just a technology business. And sure, the technology is there and the technology has evolved, particularly over the last 8 years. Mobile's really important, location awareness, social networking to build trust between users. Those are all important technology aspects. But the real challenge here is thinking through how to make the consistency and quality and the people operations side of the business really work. So I'd say that's one thing that's sort of grossly underestimated. I think the second is just good business practices and unit economics. As the sharing economy evolved, there was so much venture capital money and investor money sort of being poured into the space that some businesses just weren't operating in a sustainable way and they burnt out very quickly.
You talked about the amount of capital that went into some of these companies and still goes into a lot of companies coming out of Silicon Valley that might have one good idea and some excited people who think it will revolutionize businesses. Are you concerned that that's an unsustainable way to operate?
I'm actually thinking it's probably going to be a good thing. You know, I think we're starting to see the market take a turn and the market shift. You know, when I founded the company in 2008, 2009, this was a very tough time to be raising money. There wasn't a lot of capital available. And so I think TaskRabbit's DNA has always been more on sort of the scrappy, let's run really capital efficient side. But over the last, you know, 5 to 8 years, we've seen that cycle fully play out. You know, at the top of the market, it was easy to get a check written for $30 to $50 million based on an idea and a little bit of data. I think those days are probably quickly coming to a close, which I think is going to require companies to really think about profitability and sustainability for the future, which I think is a great thing.
Leah Buskey of TaskRabbit. And briefly, Zoe Kleinman, does the idea of the gig economy even appeal to you?
It does. I use it a lot. But I have to say, the secret is in the people. Sometimes I get such fantastic service, I think I've underpaid. And other times I get such awful service, I wish I hadn't given them anything.
Good point. Well, we have run out of time again. Thanks to my special guest, Gerard Grech of Tech City UK. Thanks to Zoe Kleinman. You can read all her stories and more at bbc.com/technology. Don't forget our Facebook page, BBC Technology and Tech Tent, and join us again in the Tech Tent at the very same time next week.